work. It's always a pleasure and an honor to work with you every day.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, I feel the same way, and I'm very honored to have been on the EI podcast. So thank you very much for having me.
Now listen to this. Wow, this enemy of all mankind. It's not a war, battle by mind. War is causing rest in the younger generation. Induction, destruction, who wants to die? War, regard your war. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
War, say it, say it, say it. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Now listen to this. That shattered many young men's dreams. Men in disabled, bitter and mean. Life's too short, precious to be fought in wars each day. War can't give life, you only take away life. Whoa, 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 whoa. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
Wah, wah. Regard y'all. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Now listen to this.
War ain't nothing but a heartbreaker. War, that one friend and then the undertaker.
Just war.
You are listening to AWOL Radio here on 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo, radiowaterloo.ca, broadcasting to all of Waterloo Region.
From Incarcerated Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal, and you're listening to Waves Through Walls, Prison Radio on CKMS in Waterloo.
Toxic prisons. Several years ago, the Workers' World newspaper published an article of mine entitled Jailhouse Environmentalist. It told the tale of a prisoner named Bryant Arroyo, a man who responded to the planned placement of a massive gas liquefaction plant right outside the gates of the state prison in Mahanoy in northeast Pennsylvania with action. First, Arroyo did his research. He went to the library and read the environmental impact statement. What he learned of the particulates and chemicals to be released by the plant concerned him even more. He went around the prison and talked to everybody, including the guards, explaining that they too would be exposed to the particulates, and if their families lived close enough, they also would be exposed. Arroyo began the organizing phase, and before long, letters began trickling into the local governing council protesting the plant. The trickle became a flood, and eventually, over 900 letters arrived there. The plant plan was canceled. Arroyo, a bilingual Puerto Rican, had won. When I met him, I told him he was the first jailhouse environmentalist I had ever met. Arroyo then enrolled in correspondence courses with a group known as Environmental Defense Fund to deepen his understanding of environmental law. For example, one thing Arroyo learned was that in Pennsylvania's Constitution, Article 1, Section 27, the following words are written: the people have a right to clean air. Several years ago, the Abolitionist Law Center of Pittsburgh issued a damning report on a Pennsylvania state prison situated right atop a toxic waste dump. The prison became a cancer hotspot, affecting prisoners and staff alike. It remains there today. And finally, what are prisons except sinks of negativity? What are they except places of mass pollution of the spirit, the mind, the psyche? The environment of prisons is one of oppression. We cannot ignore this truth. How can any good come from it? Perhaps that's why such an institution is plagued by recidivism, returnees to prison who cannot cope with home. Any other institution with such a record of malperformance would be shuttered because of such failure. Unfortunately, such is not the case with prison, which is still with us. Only a mass movement can transform this social reality. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. Eddie Africa, free. The news came through like a beam in the night. Eddie Africa has been released today. Eddie Africa, MOVE member and survivor of the August 8, 1978 MOVE confrontation in Philadelphia, was free. Eddie Africa, after over 40 years in Pennsylvania state and U.S. federal prisons, was home. The news radiated like heat from a noonday summer sun, and men smiled as if seeing their grandchildren for the first time. 40 years is far more than 40 years if your name is Eddie Africa. That's because MOVE people faced the fury of county and state officials, and that meant a kind of cruelty that most prisoners have never seen nor imagined. He has survived beatings while handcuffed and at least one attempt to castrate him. He has been struck by weapons that have ruptured his abdominal wall. And lest we forget, he has been held in prison for over 40 years despite evidence of his and other MOVE members' innocence of any crimes in connection with the MOVE confrontation of August 8, 1978. That said, Eddie Africa is beloved among prisoners for his positive spirit and his eccentric sense of humor. Now, Eddie Africa is with his loving family at home. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
From Incarcerated Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal, and you're listening to Waves Through Walls, Prison Radio on CKMS in Waterloo.
You are listening to AWOL Radio here on 102.7 CKMS, Radio Waterloo, radiowaterloo.ca. Broadcasting to all of Waterloo Region.
28th of June, 2019. Dan Keller in studio with you today. Thanks for tuning in. It's very wet out. If you're going out, maybe take a rain jacket or an umbrella. The Danger Dingo and myself braved the elements. Well, it wasn't raining when we left for our walk to the station. And then it started raining and pouring. And we're very wet in the studio. And Dingo keeps shaking. So if we go off air suddenly, it's because Dingo has sprayed water on everything. And he'll have to clean it up. Anyways, Prison Radio we started off with. Couple pieces from Mumia Abu Jamal and Eddie Africa Free. Awesome to hear that news. Several of the MOVE members have been freed over the last couple years. Check prisonradio.org for more commentary by Mumia Abu Jamal and many other incarcerated, imprisoned men, women, other folks, mostly American based, but yeah. AWOL Radio, we're going to play, we're going to start today, we're going to get into the, it's an autonomous day of action today for Free Cedar. Cedar Hopperton is being targeted by the Hamilton police. Police are alleging that he broke bail conditions or parole conditions by attending a demo. Statements coming out of north-shore.info in the tower saying Cedar wasn't even at the demo where white nationalist, homophobe Chris Vanderveed attacked, and others, of course, attacked the Hamilton Pride celebrations in I think it was Gage Park in Hamilton. And today, so Cedar languishes in jail now on hunger strike for the last 5 days. Check out north-shore.info for more on that. If you're on the Facebook, the tower has some statements up. I think they're probably all the same statements by now, or everything's been updated. I'm going to read some pieces from north-shore, or at least one. Going to start off, however, bringing it back to how I said we're going to start off with something. Last Thursday was River Run 2019, Justice for Grassy Narrows, Build the Mercury Home Now, Trudeau, come on, Liberal government, put the money in a trust. So after when you're voted out of your ridiculous positions of power in October, the money will be there for Grassy Narrows. So listen to this piece. Look, go to freegrassy.net. We'll be cutting a longer episode of AWOL Radio specifically for the River Run. This is just the speeches at Queen's Park that came after an opening. We don't have the opening cut yet. This is the only. So we got 21 minutes of this. So this is the Free Grassy River Run event from last week, last Thursday, the 20th of June, here on AWOL Radio.
Being here, and a huge special welcome to those who traveled 1,700 kilometers from Grassy Narrow. We are so honored to have you with us and have you speak with us today. I'm going to start by acknowledging the lands and the waters that we're on. Toronto has a complex history and has been the home of Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe peoples since time immemorial. And it is part of the treaty lands and territories of the Mississaugas of the Credit. Wendat peoples also have a long and deep relationship with this land and water. And Toronto is home to many other Indigenous peoples from across Turtle Island, South America, and the globe. There are also important long-lasting connections between Black and Indigenous people in Toronto. So I want us to ask that we all think about what it means to be in right and respectful relationship with Indigenous peoples when we are on their land. And this is different depending on where you come from and who you are. For those of us who immigrated here of our own volition, we have a particular responsibility to learn from Indigenous peoples whose territories we are on, instead of immediately trusting the colonial governments who pillaged our homelands to steal these ones. It's time now for us to listen to Indigenous governance and laws, because the white settler governments cannot be trusted to care for life and the future. And they're showing that all the time. This territory is subject to the Dish with One Spoon Agreement. This agreement is concerned with taking only what we need, leaving enough for the next one, and cleaning up after ourselves. That's an important theme for Grassy Narrows, because of what that community has had to face from the Canadian and Ontario governments. So let's question deeply what it means to be a visitor to this place that's under this agreement. And we need to think about what we can leave here for others in exchange for what we'll take. So I'm honored now to introduce Chief Rudy Turtle of Grassy Narrows.
Good afternoon. I want to start off by telling you a story. Probably some of you have heard it, but if you haven't heard it, I'll tell you that story. There's a story of a woman who was looking for justice. She would bug this judge throughout the day, and she would be asking him for justice. And she kept bugging him, even going to his place at night, knocking at his door at night, at his window. And she would be asking him, "I want justice from my adversary." And this judge was a very hard judge. He said he didn't respect God, he didn't respect people. But she never gave up. She always bugged him and bugged him. Finally, one evening, he gave up and he said, "Give this woman justice. Give her what she's asking for." The reason I'm sharing this story is because Grassy is asking for justice. And in the same way, just like that woman, we will not give up until it happens. We will keep asking for justice, and we will keep asking the governments to do what's right. The other day, I seen the one thing. We've been asking the Prime Minister to come to our community, and I keep mentioning that over and over again. And I was very disappointed. You know, his excuse is always, my schedule is very tight. I can't put you in my schedule. And yet, when the Toronto Raptors win a championship, he can change his schedule and go sit with all those people, and yet he can't even come and sit and put his foot down in Grassy Narrows. It shows where his priorities are, and he's going around telling people that reconciliation with Native people is his top priority. He just keeps, you know, just always says things that he can't even keep his promise. First he says that he's for climate change, then a couple of days ago he goes and allows a pipeline to be opened. Well, really, that's terrible. So, as I said, we're not gonna give up. We're just gonna keep on going. I want to share another thing with you. This is personal. You know, every year at Christmas, we have family get-togethers. And my family and I, we were no different. I come from a family where my dad was a fishing guide, a trapper. And my mother did the same thing. She fished, she harvested naturally. I would say I come from a humble family. We weren't rich. As a matter of fact, my family lived out in the bush. We didn't live right in the reserve. We were one of the last family. We were probably the last family to move into the community. We lived outside the reserve. I could truly say we were outsiders. We lived at a place they called the old reserve. And even after we left the old reserve, we lived at a place. There's a store called Hudson's Bay, but it was living behind, a few kilometers behind that store. That's where we lived. Just me and my mother and my brothers. It was just out in the bush with no hydro, no electricity. We had no TV. That's how we lived. And in the social ladder, you could say that we were poor. We weren't rich. We spoke our language. One good thing about my mother is she did not allow English in our home. Every time we spoke English, she said, "You're not a white man, you're a native person." And that needs to be taught in our homes nowadays, because many of our indigenous people are losing their language. Even our own language in Grassy Narrows, many of our young people just speak English. They do understand the language, but they can't speak it. So anyway, going back to my family, there was this toy that my brother got for Christmas. You put air in that toy, and it would stand up in almost like a pear shape. And what you would do with that toy is you would punch it, then it would come back up again. You kick it, it would come back up again. No matter what you did to it, if you kick it hard, it always bounced back up and it would be looking at you. And we would be there hitting it, doing whatever we can, elbow, whatever. It would always bounce back up. And my brother, who's older and he's bigger, well, all my brothers are bigger than me. I'm the smallest guy. But anyway, they would kick it and that thing would come back up again. No matter how hard you kick this thing, it always come back up again. Why am I telling you this? It's because of this. Look what they hit us with. They hit us with 60 scoops, but we managed to come back up again. They put us in residential school. They tried to put us down, but we come back up again. No matter what they hit us with, we always come back up again. And no matter what they hit us with in the future, we will come back up again. We're not going away. And the thing about this toy is it had a silly grin, it had a silly face. You hit it, it would come up smiling. Boy, I would love to hit John with his silly grin. He comes back up again. So anyway, with the Grassy Narrows, we've been hit with a lot of things. We've been hit with mercury. We've been hit with residential school. We've been hit with the reservation system. We've been hit with the relocation. All these things have hit my community. We've been hit with racism. We've been hit again and again. But like I said, like that toy, we will always come back up again. We are not going away. In Grassy Narrows as long as this world exists, just like we've been living there for thousands of years, we are not going away. They've asked us, there's questions people ask. One of them, why do you keep eating the fish? Well, that's been a part of our diet for years and centuries. They've asked us to relocate. We're not going to relocate because we've been living there for thousands of years. They should relocate and go back to where they came from. Don't tell us what to do in our land. It's our land and we will keep fighting for it. And we will keep standing up for it. And we're not going away. We will always be there. And so this afternoon, I'm asking you to support us. I'm asking you, and I thank you for being here with us. We are asking the federal government for justice. We're asking the provincial government for justice. We are asking them to clean the river. We are asking them to compensate their people properly. We are asking them to fix a problem that should have been fixed 50 years ago. Fix it now. Quit delaying. Fix it. Fix it while our elders are alive. Fix it while we're still here. Fix it while it's in your power. Today's the day for justice. Thank you.
Hey, Trudeau! We know what's just. Put that money in a trust. No more lies. We know what's just. Put that money in a trust. It's now my pleasure to introduce Roseanne Archibald, the regional chief.
First of all, I want to acknowledge the creator the world around us and our place in it. I specifically also want to acknowledge the many nations who have walked this land before and who continue to walk it today, and particularly the Mississaugas of the Anishinaabe who are hosting us on their treaty lands today. I am so happy to be here. I continue to join these rallies for Grassy Narrows, and today I am going to also be reading part of a statement from National Chief Perry Bellegarde, who is also a big supporter of this issue. And I want to acknowledge you, all of the people here. I'm just so grateful to see a sea of faces. All of the supporters, give yourself a round of applause. I mean, you have come out time and time again to show governments that this community does not stand alone, that you as individual citizens are standing with this community, and that's really important. It's important that the cameras not be pointed at me, but they look at you, because there's such a diversity of people in this crowd today. It's not just First Nations. There's all kinds of people that are joining Grassy Narrows in their call for justice. And for me as a leader, a First Nation leader, I'm so grateful and I'm so happy to see that. So thank you so much for being here. And I also ask you if you can continue to talk to your friends, to talk to other allies out there about this issue so that this issue can get resolved finally. It's been 40 years. That's a long time to wait for justice. And so your work of talking to other allies and bringing other people forward to support this community is so very important. So miigwech, ninanaskamun, for your presence here today. I want to just read briefly what the National Chief has asked me. And I'm just going to read it verbatim. The National Chief continues to urge the federal and provincial governments to work directly with the people of Grassy Narrows on an action plan with tangible solutions to the impacts of mercury poisoning. The people of Grassy Narrows have long been dealing with mercury poisoning for more than 40 years. The situation has claimed lives, disrupted families, and has hurt the entire nation. Justice is long overdue. It's time for concrete action so the people of Grassy Narrows can rebuild their lives, their way of life, their livelihood, and their nation. So thank you to National Chief Bellegarde for sending that message on. And I just want to say that I will continue to stand with this community. I've been to Grassy Narrows. I've seen the impacts of mercury poisoning firsthand, and I will be with them on this journey until we reach that place where justice will be served. Miigwech.
I want to say something too. The pulp and paper mill in Dryden, Ontario, spilled mercury poisoning into our river system. And that's why my ears keep ringing all the time. And it makes me sad. It makes me sad, you know. My ears keep ringing all the time. And it really makes me sad. But the only thing is, what I'm happy about is they're going to put a mercury home on our home reserve. They're going to be for mercury crisis victims like myself. Like I said before, my ears keep ringing all the time. And that's not good. Just a minute here, I need to wipe my tears from my eyes. Anyway, we're asking Prime Minister Trudeau to compensate us for the mercury poisoning that the pulp and paper mill, you know, has been doing in our river system. And I guess that's about all I want to say, because our chief
I've been a chief too for Grassy Knolls for a few years, and I was really happy to serve the people. I was really happy to serve the people of Grassy Knolls for a long time. I just want to say thank you for letting me speak. And I guess that's about all I have to say.
The violence and the harm that has been caused in Grassy Narrows is abundantly clear, and yet government is still ignoring it and still not doing the cleanup that they promised to do 2 years ago. This is a government of endless broken promises.
Endless broken promises.
I'm now happy to introduce Saul Mamakwa, who is the NDP Member of Provincial Parliament for Kiwetinohk.
If any of my colleagues in the NDP are here, can you stand behind me? Again, my name is Saul Mamakwa. I'm the MPP for the Kiwetinohk, and Grassy Narrows is part of my riding. I'm glad to be here to support the community members, the leadership. But I also would like to thank you, that everyone that's here to support the community. When the chief speaks about the land, the water, and the animals that are in that land, when we speak about identity, when we speak about culture, language, traditions of our people, they come from the land. And it's really critical to have access to our lands, and that's what makes us who we are. But also, when I got a note from Grassy leadership about doing this rally, one of the things that happened is the security office keeps coming to me. They haven't applied for to do the rally in this yard. And the message I got from the leadership was that they got a permit from the Mississaugas of the new program. They got a permit. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, we understand this is a colonial system. Colonial systems play a role in getting away from the needs and the needs of our people. The cost of doing nothing, the cost of being complacent, and the cost of playing hot potato on the lives and the health of people of Grassy Narrows and on our people is paid for by their health and their lives. And that's very clear when we talk about governments that, these systems are built to take away the rights of our people to the lands and resources that are there in the north. And when I say that, when we talk about Grassy Narrows, when we talk about the poisoned the waters, water is so critical to every one of us. And I believe that, by not responding, by not acting, is just another form of
genocide.
And I know that's very clear, and that's the way we've seen it from time and time again through other residential schools, that the 60 school, that the systems are like that. And I'm here to support the community and moving forward, make sure that they have justice. And I ask you to continue to share with your friends, with your colleagues, that we need to be together, and the governments need to treat us as people as well, treat us as human beings. We are people too. Miigwech.
It's time for us to march. Are we ready to walk? So we're gonna have a beautiful walk now all the way to Grange Park, but on the way we're gonna make a very important stop at INAC, which is at 655 Bay, okay? Hey, Trudeau! We know what's just! Put that money in a trust! No more lies! We know what's just! Put that money in a trust!
You are listening to AWOL Radio here on 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo, radiowaterloo.ca, broadcasting to all of Waterloo Region.
AWOL Radio. Whoa. AWOL Radio here on CKMS 102.7, radiowaterloo.ca. Check out grandrivermc.ca for past episodes of AWOL Radio. We just posted up our interview with John Honk, who is on a day seven of the blockade at Owenda Provincial Park, north of Midland, on Anishinaabe territory. Check out our interview with Johnny Honk and support the Oshkamazdig Land Reclamation Project and Education Project. All right, we were going to play that interview. We recorded that interview last week on last week's show, cut it, but want to do some more recording. This is today. Today is, hold on. Today is a day of action. Drop all charges against Pride defenders. Free Cedar now. It's June 28th. It's Autonomous Day of Action in support of the queers who fought back against the rights attack on Hamilton Pride. Free Cedar now. Drop all charges against Pride defenders. And this is posted up on the Tower's Facebook page. Drop all charges against Pride defenders. Free Cedar now. We are calling for an autonomous. We are calling for autonomous action in support of those who are facing repression for defending themselves and others from far-right violence at Hamilton Pride. This Friday, June 28th, we are asking for people far and wide to show support and solidarity by taking action where they live. Actions could include things like banner drops, postering, rallies, or any number of other more creative endeavors. If possible, it would be great if you could share it with us by sending a photo and or brief description to thetower@riseup.net. You could also post things yourself on north-shore.info and send us the link. Please share widely. Some background. On June 15th, 2019, in Hamilton, Ontario, Pride was attacked by a group of far-right homophobes, Christian fundamentalists, neo-Nazis, and queer bashers. They arrived with massive homophobic signs and banners and immediately began to scream insults and slurs. They aggressively harassed individuals, made jokes about rape, and threatened physical violence. Things quickly escalated as the bigots violently confronted people who were holding a fabric barrier in an attempt to block them from disrupting Pride. Initiated by the far-right activists, a brawl broke out. Queers who refused to allow their presence to go unchallenged were attacked, but fought back. Several friends were injured and required medical attention. After being kicked out of Pride, this same group chased and assaulted queer youth in the neighborhood, and then went on to attack people at Toronto Pride the following week. Since these events, Hamilton police have focused exclusively on going after the queers who defended themselves and their community. Over the course of the last week, police have been targeting and harassing known queer anarchists in the city, Hamilton. Our dear friend Cedar, who wasn't even present at the event, was arrested on Saturday and sits in jail on hunger strike as you read this. On Monday, another queer was arrested. They were released from the station and are facing two criminal charges. We have confirmation that another arrest is forthcoming, and that even more are a possibility. F this, F the police, for all they do to protect racists, misogynists, and homophobes. Drop all charges against Pride defenders and free Cedar now. You can get more information on north-shore.info. Try to read this statement. It might be a north-shore.info kind of reading day here. And we'll do the first up, we'll do the Hamilton Pride 2019 report back. It's kind of long. It's good. I think I can get through it. It's going to take probably about 10 minutes. This was submitted anonymously to North Shore Counter Info. June 15th, 2019. By 2 p.m., the group of Bible-thumping homophobes and white nationalists who had crashed Pride were escorted out of the park by an ensemble of late-to-the-party cops and a boisterous crowd of jeering queers. Their visit to Hamilton Pride 2019 lasted just under an hour and was filled with some of the most confrontational behavior we've seen from these people yet. By the time they left the park, they were missing several of their 12-foot scripture signs, two GoPro cameras, and some body armor. A few of them were bleeding and likely woke up the next day with goose eggs and bruises, but it seems they sustained no serious injuries. Unfortunately, we can't say the same. While some of them simply called it a day after leaving the park, others decided to wander the neighborhood, seeking out faggots and sinners to target for fun. Footage emerged of them chasing a teenager who had left Gore Park down a residential street, calling them a sodomite, a pussy, and laughing at the way that they ran away. The teen allegedly took shelter in a familiar gym where they knew they would be safe. These haters, as they're widely known, also posted a video that night declaring the day a loss. They hadn't done what they set out to do, which was to spend the day at Pride disrupting the festival. So what happened? Well, if you believe the Pride Committee statement, the reason for this queer victory was because of cooperation with authorities and clever spatial planning on the part of organizers. In truth, the Pride Committee had no plan to deal with the haters. The Pride Committee was simply hoping the cops would take care of the situation, and when that didn't happen, they were too cowardly to even acknowledge what had really gone on. That more than 70 empowered queers and allies put their bodies on the line to confront the haters, after sustaining multiple serious injuries and running our voices ragged, had demoralized and beat them back to the point that they decided to leave, something they rarely do. The story of Pride 2019 is not one of an orderly and colorful celebration with clever permitting by the organizers. It's one of brutal homophobia and awe-inspiring community bravery. Rewind a couple of weeks. Pride in Dunnville, Ontario was an awful experience. 6 hours of trying to drown out the haters with drums and chants and music was more than we could tolerate. 6 hours of being verbally abused with targeted sermons about childhood rape, personal trauma, and eternal damnation was way too much. We had dealt with the people last year in Hamilton, Dunnville, and Toronto. We wouldn't do another standoff. We couldn't handle another marathon trying to out-scream and out-chant a pack of homophobes on a day when we're supposed to be celebrating our collective empowerment against such things. And so, in anticipation of Hamilton Pride 2019, people started strategizing for something different. This planning happened far away from the Pride Committee, far away from cops, and relied on the trust and camaraderie built within Hamilton's queer and anarchist circles over the past decade. In coordination with other tactics, banner holders, drum players, medics, etc., an affinity group formed to experiment with a new tactic. What if the hater strategy of showing up and flying their 12-foot scriptures and calling us sinners while screaming in our faces for the entire day fell flat? What if instead of getting to stand face to face with Pride and spew their nonsense, they were forced to stare at a black wall all day? So we built one. A black hole for the haters to disappear into. A 30-foot-wide, 9-foot-tall black banner reinforced by 7 pieces of 2x2 lumber. In the days leading up to the reinforced banner, we reinforced the banner, talked about comfort levels, and practiced moving as a team. On the day of Pride, we formed a pink block with t-shirt balaclavas. And as soon as we got word that the haters had arrived, we marched our banner across the park and met with dozens of other Pride attendees who had been anticipating them. We unfurled the black hole and placed ourselves directly between the haters and the Pride celebration. The crowd erupted in applause that these assholes had temporarily been erased. While several people confronted the haters directly as they tried to get around us, our crew stayed focused on blocking them off from the festival and keeping them contained and out of sight. We were being assertive, even pushy, if they tried to get too close, but we intentionally weren't throwing fists. We wanted to see how this tactic played out. Each of us had agreed that we weren't going looking for a fight, but we were ready if they started one. What ensued over the next hour was an absolute mess of brute violence, resoluteness, and spontaneous solidarity. One by one, people who were part of our original affinity group pulled themselves to the other side of the banner to tend to serious injuries. A few of us were smashed in the face by a helmet-wielding maniac named Christopher Vanderveed, a white supremacist from Kitchener, Ontario. One of our crew got knocked to the ground and kicked in the head by John Mark Moretti, whose real name is Yili Radavica, a Toronto creep from a radical street preacher group called Servanthoods. There's a link to the Anti-Racist Canada article IDing all these creeps on this page. Check out anti-racist.blogspot.com for that article. And if you have more details on these people, submit it to us. The only thing that saved our friend from a serious head injury was a brave person in the community who happened to see him, tossed their cane aside, and threw himself over our dazed friend to stop the attack. Again, this is the kind of queer courage Pride Hamilton refuses to talk about. Several others got punched repeatedly, tackled, and kicked. Many of us who fought that day report being taken aback by how brutal they were being. Whereas we tend to hesitate when faced with the opportunity to kick someone while they're down, the haters acted with ruthless haste. Ultimately, our tactic of trying to hold the black wall while simultaneously protecting ourselves in this fight proved ineffective for our pink block crew, and many of us had to choose between dropping the banner or fighting with one hand. But it ultimately didn't matter. What matters is the fact that when I had to drag myself away from the fight with a waterfall of blood tumbling out of my face, I looked back and saw the black wall was still standing, being held by a group of people, some of whom I didn't even know. People who knew the value of what we were doing, of what we were trying to do, stepped up when we couldn't do it any longer. The black hole stayed intact and standing until the haters left the park. What matters here is that instead of sitting back and praying for the police to save us, a huge group of people rallied together and drew a line. That Pride was not a safe space for homophobic preachers. That feeling I got looking up at the banner still standing overwhelmed any pain or fear I experienced that day or in the days after. That feeling makes me completely unafraid, and whether or not the police are looking for me or any of my friends, it makes me unafraid of what the haters are planning for next year. I'm going to go ahead and call that feeling pride. I feel proud of my queer community, proud of my anarchist community, maybe even proud of Hamilton on the whole. We know how to take care of each other and stand up for ourselves, even if we don't often get a chance to do so. Because the haters are so deeply obsessed with obtaining footage of every minute of their pathetic lives in order to make themselves into YouTube celebrities, we have more than enough video documentation of the events. Scuffles recorded from multiple angles, the brute thud of helmet against bone caught from multiple mics. We know what happened. Pride was ruthlessly attacked by a group of homophobic men. People who came equipped with body armor, weapons, and a readiness to queer bash anyone who crossed their paths. We stood up to them, we fought back, and we sabotaged their efforts to spend the day in the park. After almost an hour of skirmishes, the police decided to step in, there wasn't anything left to do. The haters knew they couldn't sustain their presence any longer, and welcomed the police escort out of the park. The haters can be heard on film saying, "We have to leave," over and over again. And can be heard shrieking into police about their stolen cameras, and eventually can be seen skulking out of the park. The official Pride statement, and much of the mainstream media coverage, has focused on the absence of police intervention. We know from direct sources that the Pride Committee, though they couldn't openly invite the police to Pride, a decision long fought for by the queer community, did make a deal with them that they would be there to intervene when the yellow vests and preachers showed up. The police knew they would be there. The Pride Committee knew it. Anyone who's been paying attention over the past couple years knew it. But the police didn't follow through. Why? One person overheard a cop offer a simple explanation. Quote, "Don't you remember? We weren't invited to Pride. We're just going to stand here. Not my problem." Unquote. It was a perfectly honest response and demonstrates the level of indifference police have always shown towards queer people. But if you think about it, police aren't invited to any of the places they do their work. When they break up drug trafficking rings, it's not because they were invited by someone, it's because they are allegedly tasked with protecting people. Friendliness is not supposed to be a precursor to this interaction. But police in North America and beyond have always shown a cruel indifference towards cruel people. And it's not just because we're not friendly enough and don't invite them to Pride. It's because it's not their job to protect us. It's their job to protect power and wealth. And as the power and wealth in this world does not rest in the hands of queer people, people of color, indigenous people, etc., the people have no motivation to protect. The police have no motivation to protect. Which is why making backroom deals with them and hoping they show up is a terrible idea. Which is why making excuses and continuously hiding from the problem of a rapidly growing violent right-wing movement that wants to smash our skulls is a terrible idea. Which is why Pride was historically and should always be about queers standing up for each other against the police, against fascists, against homophobes, against anyone who gets in the way of us being here and being fantastically queer. The Pride Committee, as in previous years in the city, demonstrated a willful neglect of the queer community in Hamilton, preferring optics over gritty truth, preferring stories of victimization over empowerment, preferring stories of rainbow and glitter over stories of solidarity and strength. This isn't just about everyone needing to hit the gym and get ready for a fight. The vast majority of the people who helped drive the haters out of the park didn't have to throw or receive a single punch. But those people had our backs when we did. And they were brave enough to keep waving their signs, screaming their truths, and waving their tits around in the face of those assholes. Some people stayed well back and helped hide the signs when we threw them backwards, or helped bandage us up when we needed a medic. Reviewing the footage confirms that it was an unbelievably diverse range of people and tactics that confronted the haters. Shoutouts to the rowdy teenagers who showed so much bravery. To the unmasked people who confronted the haters. To the unmasked people who pulled the haters off of us if we were getting pummeled. and to the Flamingo Mutiny Brigade for once again laying down your epic beats to drown out their nonsense and to keep morale high. The queer community has too often directed its energies towards state-implemented solutions. More hate crime legislation and more cops aren't the solution. Queers looking out for each other and building empowerment is the solution and always has been the solution. If the police were at Pride this year, we never would have been able to kick those haters out of the park. The cops would have formed a line between us, protected their right to free speech, and arrested any queer who tried to escalate. We would never have been able to rip down their signs, smash their cameras, or push them back more than 40 feet where they tried to protest. As it was, the first thing the police did when they arrived on the scene was to try to force us to take off our pink masks, which would have exposed us to the far right and threatened our safety. Already, some of our friends have been doxxed and threatened with intense violence. More cops at Pride will always mean a more dangerous situation for us. That's why we can't let the aftermath of this be about trying to hold the police accountable. We're calling for arrests or protection. They aren't accountable to us, and they aren't here to protect us. We should never be advocating for them to have more resources, or more authority ever. We don't need the police to do something. We did something. And that's worth more than 100 half-hearted televised police apologies to the queer community about bathhouse raids and public sex stings and disappeared trans people and serial killers left to pick us off for years. Thanks to every one of you who was out there. From the bottom of my heart, the fire we brought that day will stay with me. The fire we brought that day will stay with me, forever reminding me of what being a proud queer is all about. Again, posted up on north-shore.info, Hamilton Pride 2019 report back here on AWOL Radio.
Two cups of tea, one for you and one for me. Drown out the pain from polluted acid rain and flaming gasoline until we're clean. Two dead police, one for hope and one for peace. Watching government lies leak into your empty eyes from the TV. And where is history? Three dead police, one for thanks and two for please. In every single town.